This plebiscite is about two things and two things only: Tony Abbott's ideology and Malcolm Turnbull's job security.
At some point, the Liberal Party are going to have to deal with a plan B.
I never thought that I would ever see anything like this.
You wouldn't know how many people were gay until you took a look at this march.
We are everywhere!
I think we have to teach straight people how to count.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Sexual and gender minorities shut out of UN's new urban agenda. Australia's opposition pulls the plug on Turnbull's wheezing marriage plebiscite. And historic highlights from Washington's first queer mega march. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending October 15th, 2016. Canada, the European Union, Mexico, and the United States pushed for an acknowledgement of homophobia and the recognition of LGBT people's humanity in a key policy paper to be finalized at a major United Nations conference in Ecuador next week. But Reuters reported on October 12th that up to 17 countries, led by Belarus, were able to block the inclusion of sexual and gender minorities in the UN's non-binding New Urban Agenda Agreement during behind-the-scenes negotiations. The news agency reports that Egypt, Indonesia, Pakistan, Qatar, Russia, and the United Arab Emirates were among the countries supporting Belarus. Considering that 76 countries around the world deny any legal recognition of same-gender couples, and at least seven countries punish gay sex with death, equality advocates were disappointed by the failure of what would have been a significant step forward for LGBT people by the UN. The agreement is intended to address the challenges of the world's rapidly growing cities and will offer guidelines for sustainable urban development over the next 20 years. A call for action section in the paper recognizes the special vulnerabilities of and discrimination against specific groups in cities, including women and girls, the disabled, indigenous people, the homeless, slum dwellers, refugees, and youth, but makes no mention of LGBT people.
The list of countries supporting Belarus also included Bangladesh, Iran, Malaysia, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, and Zimbabwe. A news release from Belarus said the group of countries wanted to reaffirm that the family is the natural and fundamental group unit of society. Ellen Woodsworth, chair of Women Transforming Cities International Society and a former city councillor in Vancouver, British Columbia, drove the initial Canadian push to enshrine LGBT rights in the document. She told Reuters that cities are where LGBT people go to find community, but in many nations, they just don't face silencing but extreme violence. It is just unbelievable, she added, that a document such as this on cities should not contain protections against discrimination for sexual orientation.
The Russian government has shut down a website for LGBT youth called Dieti 404, Children 404 in English. Again. The site's founder, Yelena Klimova, announced the latest closure on social media this week. She said the shutdown decision was made by Siberia's Barnaul District Central Court in March, but that she was only informed of it this week. Despite his claim to the contrary, Vladimir Putin's Russia is a repressive place for queer people. A government media watchdog agency first shut down Children 404 in September 2015, charging the only online support group for LGBT teens with violating the notorious Russian law against exposing minors to gay propaganda. But a new group with even more members formed very soon thereafter. It continued to be a popular platform for teens to share stories about the anti-LGBT prejudice they endured in their everyday lives. Klimova was fined 50,000 rubles, about $755, for originally setting up the queer youth website. She told the Moscow Times this week that the government has now blacklisted Children 404 for spreading banned information. Most likely, the site will be suspended in Russia in the near future, she said. We shall keep working.
The U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals vacated a decision by three of its own judges this week in a lesbians employment discrimination lawsuit and said the entire Chicago-based nine-judge court will rehear the case in what's called an en banc session. That three-judge panel upheld a 2014 lower court ruling in July of this year against South Bend, Indiana lesbian Kimberly Hively, deciding that federal law does not ban workplace bias against LGBT people. Hively was a former part-time instructor at Ivy Tech Community College in her hometown. The lawsuit claims that college administrators refused to make her a full-time employee only because she's a lesbian. She began teaching part-time at Ivy Tech in 2000 and charged that the school turned her down for each of the six full-time positions she applied for, despite never having received a negative evaluation. In its July opinion, the three-judge panel criticized the absence of sexual orientation workplace protections, but decided that only Congress or the Supreme Court could change that. A date for lawyers to argue their positions before the full nine-judge appeals court has yet to be announced.
Courthouse News reported this week that five men in Mississippi who were convicted under the state's sodomy law are challenging it in federal court because of the provision that requires people convicted of having anal sex to register as sex offenders. The Republican-dominated state legislature has refused to repeal Mississippi's law, despite the Supreme Court's Lawrence v. Texas ruling in 2003 that struck down as unconstitutional all state laws criminalizing private consensual adult same-gender sex. Referencing Lawrence v. Texas, the 29-page complaint says that, despite that clear proclamation made more than a decade ago, Mississippi continues to require people convicted of unnatural intercourse to register as sex offenders and follow myriad onerous prescriptions on their everyday life. One conviction dates back to 1979. According to the lawsuit filed in Southern Mississippi Federal Court, registering as a sex offender causes humiliation and shame and places significant barriers for people to find employment and housing. The plaintiffs want the state law enjoined as unconstitutional and their names expunged from the sex offender registry. They're represented by the New York City-based Center for Constitutional Rights. The Mississippi Attorney General's office has yet to comment on the lawsuit.
In other news, transgender rights have taken baby steps forward in France. Parliament approved legislation on October 13th that allows trans people to change their name and gender designation without having to undergo sterilization. The ILGA Europe network of LGBT groups on the continent welcomed the change in French law, which came after a two-year campaign. Spokeswoman Sophie Ojean noted that there is no other population in the world that is asked to be sterilized apart from transgender. But ILGA Europe joined other groups to complain that French trans people must still go to court to legally change their gender. Delphine Refusé-Giard of the National Transgender Association told reporters that France has sometimes done revolutions, but this is not a revolutionary law. Denmark, Ireland, Malta, and Norway are among a handful of nations that have already eliminated that legal obstacle. But the new French law does specify that the change of gender won't require proof of medical treatment. It also allows emancipated minors to access the updated process.
And finally, North Carolina's embattled Republican Governor Pat McCrory continues to champion HB2. That's the notorious state law that bans local LGBT rights ordinances and requires trans people to use birth certificate-based sex-segregated public bathrooms and locker rooms. Recent polls predict that McCrory will lose his reelection bid next month. When the issue of HB2 was raised during a debate with the Democratic gubernatorial challenger Roy Cooper this week, McCrory suggested that if fellow Republican Caitlyn Jenner plans to use state university exercise facilities, she might want to make alternative post-workout shower arrangements.
If she's going to a shower facility at UNC Chapel Hill after running around the track, she's going to use the men's shower.
The Tar Heel state has lost millions and millions of dollars because of HB2, including boycotts by top-name entertainers, professional and collegiate sports associations, and philanthropic faith and business groups. McCrory publicly moaned this week that several friends and colleagues are shunning him and his wife and family because of their support for HB2. Democrat Roy Cooper, the current state attorney general, has refused to defend HB2 in federal lawsuits filed against it and says he'll push for the unpopular law's repeal if he's elected to replace McCrory.
This legislation was passed in one day and signed in the middle of the night.
His comments about HB2 addressed the current fiscal realities and ended with a rhetorical question many other people have been wondering about.
Governor McCrory continues to go across the state telling people that this is not hurting our economy and says that everything is going fine. Governor, what planet are you on?
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 15th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
You are those television cameras out there to turn around and focus on one of the largest demonstrations in the history of this country.
Did the cameras focus on that crowd? Find out later in the program.
I say either.
And I say either.
I say neither.
And I say neither.
Either.
Either.
Neither.
Neither.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Bill Shorten of Australia's major opposition Labour Party essentially called the whole thing off this week. He appeared with LGBTI families in Canberra on October 11th, following a unanimous vote by his party caucus to oppose Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's coalition government bill to have the nation vote in a plebiscite on civil marriage equality.
Over the past few weeks, I and my colleagues have taken time to meet with parents, to meet with families, to meet with kids, to hear their stories. Also, we've listened to experts, to mental health professionals, like the head of the Mental Health Council of Australia, Frank Quinlan, and of course to Australian of the Year, Professor Patrick McGorry, and many others. And the experts have unequivocally explained to Labor that the plebiscite would cause harm to gay and lesbian people, particularly but not exclusively young people. Having met these families, having listened to their stories, I could not in good conscience recommend to the Labor Party that we support the plebiscite about marriage equality.
Without the support of Shorten's Labor Party, the Greens, and a few independent MPs who oppose the plebiscite, the proposal for a probably divisive and ultimately non-binding public vote would likely fail. However, the debate on the doomed bill went forward in Parliament anyway, in keeping with the pledge Prime Minister Turnbull made to woo the farther-right National Party into his coalition government. During the debate, Shorten charged that the plebiscite was a relic of Turnbull's ousted predecessor and questioned the government's motivation for pushing it.
This plebiscite is not about marriage equality. It is about two things and two things only. Tony Abbott's ideology and Malcolm Turnbull's job security.
Attorney General George Brandis insists that the plebiscite is the only way same-gender couples can achieve civil marriage equality under the present circumstances. He set his angry sights on Labour, specifically targeting Senator and out-partnered lesbian mom Penny Wong.
This morning, the Labour Party has driven a stake through the heart of marriage equality. Has driven a stake through the heart of marriage equality. Because, Mr. President, regardless of the piety from people like Senator Wong, who assert that they believe in this cause, and today, this morning, you have been part of a caucus that has put a roadblock in front of the only feasible possibility of seeing marriage equality in Australia anytime soon.
Senator Wong took her own shot at recalcitrant Liberal Party MPs and Mr. Turnbull.
These people inside the Liberal Party who are opposed to marriage equality cannot be negotiated with, and the sooner the Prime Minister understands that, the sooner he'll look like a Prime Minister.
Turnbull continued to defend the plebiscite no matter the political, financial or human cost, apparently arguing that putting a minority's rights up for the majority's vote is more democratic than having elected legislators make laws.
I'm not going to entertain, follow Bill Shorten down his highly political road of trying to subvert a straightforward democratic process, trying to say to the Australian people, you shouldn't have a say.
Turnbull is caught between an ethical rock and a partisan hard place. At least a few of his own Liberal Party MPs are urging him to allow them to follow their consciences with a free vote in Parliament on a civil marriage equality bill. That would all but guarantee its passage, since Labour, the Greens, and a few high-profile independent MPs unanimously favour a parliamentary path for marriage equality. LGBT rights advocates agree, as do a solid majority of Australians, according to the latest public opinion polls. But leaders of the National Party are warning the Prime Minister that allowing his Liberal MPs a free vote would violate their coalition deal and could cause its collapse. Alex Greenwich of Australian Marriage Equality spoke with the Australian broadcast company's RN Drive about what happens next.
I think people would be misguided or have been misled if they think that the campaign against the gay and lesbian community ends with a plebiscite being blocked. The opponents of marriage equality are only going to continue to ramp up their campaign, and we need to make sure that that doesn't have a damaging impact. So we need to make sure that Parliament delivers this reform this year and we stop being distracted by what is an unnecessarily divisive debate.
That was an optimistic Alex Greenwich of Australian Marriage Equality. Many analysts say civil marriage equality is dead in the current parliamentary session, but the opposition is vowing to keep the pressure up on Turnbull. If he still refuses to allow a free vote, marriage equality advocates are willing to hold out until his government is replaced with a more equality-friendly administration.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
Just like the traditional June celebrations of the Stonewall Rebellion are the solstice of pride, LGBT History Month in October is the equinox. The landmark event commemorated at this time of year is the first National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights on October 14, 1979. Many of This Way Out's original reporters first met up at that march and brought back a treasure trove of audio snapshots from the streets and the stages, including the voices of Allen Ginsberg, Kate Millett, Robin Tyler, Holly Near, Meg Christian, Mary Watkins, Blackberry, and more.
Question of the day is, are you going to Washington, D.C.?
If I have to walk on my hands to Washington, I'm going to be there.
And here comes the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. The banner proclaims it, the women chant it. Third world women lead the march.
I never thought that I would ever see anything like this. But we are. I am. We're survivors. I would cry if I were the type.
I'm from Cincinnati, and I totally and fully and wholeheartedly endorse the five demands that have been published that, you know, this march is for: the repeal of homophobic laws, the passage of gay and lesbian anti-discrimination laws, and protection of gay children and child custody cases, all those things. I wholeheartedly support it, and I think that we're showing our power and our numbers, and I think this will affect our nation's view of gay and lesbian people. They'll see that we're a force that has to be contended with.
How do the people look today?
Oh, pretty strong and funny and all kinds, from funny parrots to weird little kids with strange haircuts. It's just a huge smorgasbord of humanity. You wouldn't know how many people were gay until you took a look at this march. It's great.
It's like one big family, and I didn't expect that. Because I'm not out that much, I didn't know what to expect, really. But it's like everybody knows each other, and it's a great feeling.
We are a gentle, angry people, singing for our lives. Come sing with us. We are a gentle, angry people, singing for our lives.
Tell us about your t-shirt.
This is a name that was developed by the women in Fairbanks, Alaska. There's about 14 lesbians working and living up there. They came up with a name, Klondike, and there's a newspaper, lesbian newspaper out of Anchorage called the Klondike Contact.
Talking to Sherry and Judy from Ann Arbor. Are you all having a good time?
Wonderful time.
So nice to see a whole bunch of dykes.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. I feel so supported and so much a part of this.
You know, somebody said last night at the concert that there's like really two cultures here, gay men and gay women, and they're very, very different. There needs to be respect for the differences. Do you feel that way?
I feel that way, and I feel like there is respect here. There's been no antagonism that I can possibly see at all.
I think everybody's so happy that so many people turned out, that everybody thinks it's a miracle.
I would like for the media not to do a whiteout on all the black people that were here today. Because that, or any of the third world people as far as that goes, because that happens to us a lot. I mean, we put our energy into the gay community, and a lot of the white people get the focus, but we don't get nothing. So I just like to say that.
Our dreams and our goals for the Third World Conference were that hundreds of lesbians and gays of color would come together in a spirit of unity.
Our banner represents the gay Native American people.
Today, we are united as third world lesbian and gay men to overcome our oppression.
I don't think I ever imagined it would be so huge. And it's wonderful, and it's just fantastic that there are as many people here as there were in the great Civil Rights March of 1963. I mean, you think that gay civil rights started 10 years ago. To be able to build this huge movement in that short a time, it's really short of miraculous.
It's great to know that we have outdrawn the Pope.
During the rally, one speaker quoted the park's police estimate, apparently when one march person overheard an officer saying, "There must be 250,000 faggots out there."
Well, look at us! 250,000 in the daylight! No famine, no pestilence, no earthquakes, no floods!
Montana, gay folks from Montana.
Bismarck, North Dakota, and I'm out here marching with these people because we have to show them that we're everywhere.
The deaf gay are here. They're here. I want you to know that the deaf gay here are people. We are all the same. We are no different.
We are human beings. I thank you. And I love you. We are a gentle, angry people. Singing.
Thank you very much. Be courageous this year.
What disturbed me was to pick up a Washington Post and see 25,000, and pick up a New York Times and see 75,000, and listen to the news, the local news, that said 125,000. I think we have to teach straight people how to count.
I've reached a point where I see this as really deliberately malicious. Gay crowds are consistently counted this way, and the reason is that the United States government does not wish for the data about the strength of the homosexual community in this country to go overseas truthfully. It doesn't want it going out to the straight community that way. It keeps trying to pretend that we are not here. This is a really serious political movement. And these numbers games that they were playing with us is just indicative of gay oppression.
National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights was that it both fulfilled and fell short of everyone's expectations. Those who warned that the age of apathy could not be overcome were surprised by the thousands of people who came from all over the country. Those who imagined that the march's success would advance the lesbian and gay liberation movement to a position of real power were surprised to discover that the impact of any event is determined by the significance granted it by the mass media. Thus is history reported and recorded. If a tree falls in the forest with no one to hear, does it make a sound?
The complete hour-long National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights radio documentary is available on CD at thiswayout.org. Scroll down to the thank you gift section on the right. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry and Francis O'Brien contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, who all make this program possible. Email twroradio at aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WJSC Johnson, Vermont, to MTM Coon Amble, New South Wales, KEUL Girdwood and Hope, Alaska, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all stay tuned.